Welcome to Two's Talk with Tosh, Dino, and Donnie.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Two's Talk with Dino, Tosh, and Donnie. Dino, how are you, bud?
I'm great. How are you, Donnie? Have I given any other answer?
Not yet, no. So far, consistent across the board.
I've been tired, you know.
You were sick that time.
I feel pretty good.
Remember when you were sick, you gave us a pretty detailed...
That's right.
Yeah.
I didn't have a good day that day, but no. Today's a pretty good day.
Good.
I was outside, did some lessons today.
Very good.
So that's always a good day when it's September 24th.
Good
be outside doing lessons.
Good for you, Dean. Busy man.
Yeah.
How about you, Tosh?
I'm good, bud. Really good. Just getting stuff together for some winter training stuff that's coming up and getting some lessons plans done. It's good. Excited about today's cast.
Speaking of our cast, our reach is getting better and better. Today we get to welcome Kaylee Rafter to our podcast. Kaylee, welcome.
Thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it.
So do you want to read off what you do or do you want me to intro you?
I'll let you do it.
Current catcher
speaking
for team...
like the humble Canadian I am.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that.
There you go.
Anyone who's listening probably knows who you are, but I'll just, for the people who maybe have just tuned in for the first time and were under a rock for their whole life, current catcher for Team Canada and has been mentioned as the best catcher on the planet. I've heard that said.
How mostly my parents, I think, are one and two who say that. you must have got a quote from Tom and Joan.
No, the quote comes from someone else, and it'll come up later in the podcast.
Okay.
But world-renowned catcher. How's that? And I'm sure your parents do love you, and they should, because they should be very proud.
Yes.
So, Kaylee, I want to start with you. Thanks for coming on, by the way. I know you're busy. There's lots going on, so taking some time out to talk to us and talk some softball is fantastic. Tell us about your start in Guelph.
Yeah, so born and raised in Guelph, grew up playing boys hardball because my brother played it. So he played baseball and basketball. So naturally those were the two sports that I wanted to play. At the time, just got involved in T-ball. One of my best friends growing up, her name was Jenna. We were pretty good. So they asked us to play in the boys T-ball league after our first 2 years of playing girls, just because we just threw harder than most of the other girls could catch. They said, we think you'd really benefit from going to the boys league. So our dads actually coached the team, and then it was the two of us and a team full of, obviously, younger boys. But, I think we finished 1-2 in the MVP league that year for voting for the boys league, and then just kind of transitioned to Guelph Marner Baseball. Ended up playing rep for probably 3 or 4 years of that, and then ended up shooting over to softball. And I think it was in grade 6. I tried out for the Gators, had a good run with them. Spent some time playing for Brampton, and then finished up with the Gators after we kind of got a team back together. So had a really good run with minor baseball and softball in Guelph, mostly played hometown. That was kind of my softball upbringing in Guelph. Trying to get back. I'm back here now in Guelph now, just hanging out with training for a little bit of time. We're just kind of waiting for training camp to figure itself out, but try to come back here when I can. Brother and parents still live here in town.
That's awesome. And it's funny because a lot of the guests we've had on and kind of gone through the Brampton Blazers program. It's kind of cool. I know it's a great program. They hosted my first kick with the national team with coaching the junior team. The Worlds were in Brampton, and it was pretty special. A well-run organization and one of those organizations that's well known in Canada for sure. And did I hear you say that there was two levels of T-ball? That's awesome.
We had
one level. T-ball,
there was, we had some like cool rules, I remember. So I remember the first year of T-ball, anybody could like put their hand up. So you hit the ball, the outfielder could get it and put their hand up. And then the second year T-ball, you had to throw it to the catcher, and the catcher was the only one that could put their hand up. And then it was, you went to, like, next level T-ball. That's where we joined the boys league. And then it was rookie ball. So
nice.
We had some pretty epic T-ball matches Saturday mornings down at the parks. Yeah.
See y'all down there.
Awesome. Yeah.
Awesome. Very nice. Fantastic.
Pretty hard to use epic and T-ball in the same sentence, but you found a way to work it in. So that's great.
I mean, I'm thinking back to times when we're all just hanging out together playing games, like pre-COVID times. It's got to be classified as epic at some point.
For sure it is.
Exactly.
Okay, so where do you want to start? Do you want to start how you got out of minors and into how, do you want to talk about your scouting process? What where do you want to go with this? Because your resume is pretty long. I'd like you to kind of navigate us through it.
Yeah, so I think I'd probably go into how I got seen and just going down to the state. So most of the tournaments we played in Canada at the time were pretty much local. We played the Inter-County League. So we played a lot around Canada. We went to one tournament out in Colorado, like one U.S. tournament a year we would do. So we would go to Colorado. I think I went out to Colorado in 9th and 10th grade maybe. But a lot of what we did was regional. So we'd go over the border to Michigan. We'd go over the border to Buffalo, play a tournament there. So a lot of our recruiting was regional because back when I played, most coaches weren't flying. So a lot of the offers and the recruiting that we went through with our team was teams around the border. So Detroit, Youngstown, Cal Penn in Pennsylvania, not California. Just a lot of the teams, University of Buffalo, a lot of those teams that were in around the Ontario area, those were the people that were getting out to see us. And it was just a little easier for us to be recruited and get down and be seen by those coaches. So I ended up getting a few offers for some teams around the Ontario area, ended up deciding on Detroit Mercy. I think we had 7 Canadians on the team at that point. Like it was pretty much like 5 of my teammates from Brampton, like 2 from Guelph. So we had a little Canadian run there. So it was just like going an extension of our travel ball team, and ended up playing there for 3 years before took a year off for the Olympic year in 08. So 08, I had the opportunity to play, made the Olympic team and said, I'm going to redshirt the year. We had to redshirt because we had to take that year off to train. And then after that, decided to transfer down to Florida State to finish up my career, just play a little bit more competitively down in the ACC and at a top 25 schedule. So that's so, kind of my forte through Florida State.
Well, don't skip over the fact that 2-time player of the year while you're at Detroit Mercy.
Yeah, I had a good little run there.
Well, it sounds like it, yeah. It sounds like it was all right.
They had a short fence. It was just a short fence. That's all.
Yeah, I still got to hit it.
Short.
And
porch.
Before we get into it, I know we talked about it offline. Some pretty famous alumni you share with in Florida State. 3 Heisman Trophy winners.
They do.
Famous Jameis Winston, Charlie Ward, and Chris Winkie all won the Heisman in Florida. So the athletic program there obviously is incredible. Football, the baseball team, the women's softball team, always putting out good athletes. So I guess we'll go to the Florida State first, and then if you want to jump back into your year training, getting ready for Beijing, that'd be great.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think one of the things you don't realize, and Detroit Mercy, awesome school, but the quality of athlete and the amount of athletes you get to be around, I mean, it's why I consider Tallahassee still my primary training environment now. So I'll still be able to go in pre-COVID, obviously, go and use the weight room, use the facilities. If you're an alumni, they allow you to come back and use those facilities. But, I mean, you just look at every sport. Like, you can throw out baseball, Buster Posey, like Sean Gilmartin, Rafi Lopez, like all first-round draft picks out of baseball. Kimmy Williams, a triple jumper, top 3 triple jumper in the world. She's always in the weight room. Mohamed Nikushka, he was, like, the number one. He was one of the only players ever, or only track athletes. He won triple jump, long jump, and 100 meter in the same year, national champion. Like, you're just around these athletes who are, like, top few athletes in the world, and you're lifting beside them. You're seeing how they train. You're seeing how they approach things like nutrition. And it wears on you, and it makes you want to be a better athlete. And I think that's going to a school like that and being able to continue to train there has really propelled and accelerated and allowed me to kind of have this long career and stay in the game at the level I have been for so long. I don't know if I'm still in the game now had it not been for that change, going to Florida State and really kind of building that passion and that fire to kind of continue on and see kind of the light on the other side of the tunnel after school.
That's awesome. And you know, I when you talk about training amongst athletes and you know, like-mindedness is huge, right? It just takes me back, like me and Dino, we could go back to Malfour Comfort Collegiate and we could train in the weight room while I graduated. I don't know if you graduated though, did you?
Not there.
Not be able to go back. Yeah, you might not be able to go back to our high school. But no, Kaylee, that's awesome because I think that's where, you know, that's kind of where our program is a little bit too, and it's kind of morphed into that where, you know, we started a program just to give extra training to kids because there just wasn't anything around, you know, in the prairies. And now it's kind of grown into something where you see these like-minded athletes coming together and they get an opportunity to train with better athletes. And it just kind of spawns that desire to be better. You know, and I think what you're talking about here and all the names that you threw out, I mean, to be able to train even in a facility, not even at the same time, but just have that aura of greatness mm-hmm. around. I mean, that's really special.
Yeah, and I think especially for you guys in your situation, the more you can get around people who are at the same drive as you and the same passion, like they talk about all the time, right? Like if I want to go hit balls in a day, I can make a lot of excuses for myself, but if I know I'm supposed to meet somebody at 10 o'clock at the field, if I don't show up, I'm letting someone else, like there's a different level of letting someone else down. And I think the more you can create that in your culture and just in your day to day, like really attaching on to someone else who's as driven as you are, it makes it one so much more fun because you're around people, and it's just that competitive balance and competitive nature of your training. I think that's when it really starts to take off, when you're there with people and you guys are pushing each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Is it true that this is just a question that came up? Is it true that Smokey and the Bandit, who's the guy there in Smokey and the Bandit? Was he spotting you in, like when you were doing bench?
Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds,
Burt Reynolds is a legend.
It was just a rumor. It was a rumor.
I've seen him on the sideline of a football game, but never had the opportunity, but I'm sure he could spot me.
All right. Another alumni.
Yeah.
Burt Reynolds Hall. That was the big, that's where the big football dorm was. Burt Reynolds Hall.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
So you touched on some, you know, you put in some work. We've actually started doing a lot of, you know, between our sessions, between our practices with the team, we've started giving them a bit of homework to do in between so that we know they're putting in time between the times we see them and we can gauge their growth. What's a typical week look like for you in terms of how many swings you take and how many throws you make and what's your work week look like outside of your practice?
Yeah, so I'll probably go back to like when I was training for the Olympics and when I knew I'd made the Olympic team, like I came late, so to kind of give you perspective, my first tryout I've ever had with Team Canada for the senior national team program was in January 1 over Christmas break of 07. So we were training, so the pre-Olympic year, 8 months until the Olympic tryout. The Olympic tryout was at the end of August, beginning of September of the following 07 year. And there were, I think, 45 girls there. And I kind of went there. I was a young kid that they saw some potential in, and I ended up making the most of the teams or all the teams for that next summer. And I knew at the end of 07, I was like, man, I got a long way to go. I think I can make the team, but if I want to try to compete for a spot and like actually play and not just be a bench player, if I want to get any time at the Olympics, like I have to completely remake my swing. I have to be able to play defense at first base and third base. And I got to be the best catcher I can possibly be. I knew those three things gave me a chance at least to fill some different roles on the team. So I picked up everything and I moved down to Vegas for that month before training camp. And I said, I'm going to go all out and I'm just going to figure this out. So, I mean, at that point, I was probably like 3 hours of hitting on my own before practice from like 8 a.m. to 11. They would come out and then we'd practice from 1 until 6. And then I'd go lift at like 8 o'clock at night at the 24-hour fitness, crushing like at the time not realizing like 2 PB&Js and a power bar, and that was like that was all I ate for the whole day. And I did that for like a month straight, and then I ended up making the Olympic roster, and it was like going back to like just that like that same thing. So now what my training schedule looks like, I'm probably a little more. I would be like two times a week, softball. Right now in the off season, and like a three-day lift and 2 days, so like 6 days a week, two of them being softball. But that's a lot. The only reason I can do that now is because I have so many thousands of reps in from the time I was 20 to 27. Now it's more about maintenance, and I can do a lot less and get myself to the same spot. But when I was in it, there was times that I would have blood blisters and I would just tape my hands up with white athletic tape and just keep go hitting because it was I knew I had a short time frame. But that kind of got me to the spot I'm at now. But I was kind of a cage rat. I like being around the field. I was in the cage a lot, and that doesn't work for a lot of people, but it for sure worked for me in terms of where I wanted to go and my goals in the sport as a hitter, at least for sure.
So when you were down and when you moved down to Vegas, would that mm-hmm. have been the Allison Bradley and Odie era down there? Yeah,
that was. So that yeah. they were my training partners. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Well, we go to Vegas every year for the Valentine's Day Blast. And Odie's got a team, and Allie's not coaching anymore. We've been going down there now for, well, coming up seventh year. And yep. Allie always coaches with me on that weekend. So,
it's a long-running
cool
gag, Kaylee.
Training with you. And, yeah.
How they've been there seven times. Ask me how many times I've gone to Vegas. Just ask.
Seven.
Zero times.
How many times?
Zero times. And it's become
you
like
know how cheap flights are to Vegas. Get your own flight down there.
Yeah,
there you go. That's a way to get there.
Well, okay, so I'm going this year regardless, but I really want to get the invite. You know, it's like the golden ticket from Willy Wonka. I just want the tour of the factory. It's all I want in the world. You know.
You know what we've learned? You know what? There's one thing I've learned. You don't ask. You just make it happen, and you show up, and whatever happens, happens.
There you go. And if you come down,
Donnie,
there's always
an invitation. There's always an invitation.
Come down on your own ticket. Don't wear the gear around the park, though, because you're not official.
I'm going to be in the dugout right beside you, bud. Right beside you.
You know what you need to do to really mess with them? Somehow get in as an umpire, and if you're on home plate for the first game, jokes on them.
Yeah. Should be a long
okay.
day.
He's going to do that.
Don't give him any ideas.
No, don't give him any ideas, Kaylee. He'd be all over that. Oh,
I have a
God.
Reputation as a bit of a jokester within the staff, so it's not without, you know.
This. Well, we do. Hey, Odie does have a team down there. Maybe she could use your help that weekend. Maybe come down and help her out.
Sure, I'll go anywhere. I'm not a proud man.
Oh, my goodness.
A few pulls on the slot machine and your trip pays for.
Yeah.
There it is.
It's never happened for me. I've never left Vegas with more money than when I got there. Never one time. So maybe this is my lucky year.
I don't think you're alone in that.
No, I don't think so.
No.
So you started on that. You started with Team Canada since 2007, and you went to Beijing. And we've had someone else on this podcast talked about Beijing a bit, but I'd like to hear it from you. How was your Beijing experience?
Yeah. So in terms of a game, like it was the most, like, if you want to talk about putting on a spectacle, and I don't, probably the kids that you, they won't remember that. That was like the first time that China kind of opened their doors to the world. So they, is kind of China operated on its own little bubble. They weren't really in the global commerce. They weren't a big player in the world at that time. And the Olympic Games was their time to kind of break away from the China oppression kind of talk. And that was like, they're going to put on a spectacle. And they absolutely put on the biggest spectacle. Like, I don't think any Olympic Games in the future will ever top what they put on and the amount of detail and the amount of money they put in for those games and the facilities, and everything was like top notch. So in terms of the games experience, I don't think you could have asked for a better games to go to. If you had one to choose, like I'm pretty happy that, I mean, they seed, for example, they called seeding the clouds. So they knew that pollution was going to be an issue. They legit try to, they call it seeding the clouds. Apparently you can like force it to rain. So they set it up so it was going to rain like the 2 weeks before the Olympics to clear all the pollution out. So it was going to be like bright skies with like things like that that you, we would
Holy
never think
moly,
of doing.
Wow. Oh my
They're
God.
Doing, trying to mess with nature to make sure there's as little pollution as possible.
We should do that before the Melfort shootout. Next time.
Have it rain 2 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, maybe the Lloyd Battle of the Border.
Yeah, right? I think it's a good
have
idea.
Have it rain a couple weeks before.
Sure. That is, idea. That's amazing. But, you know, that's the way it is, right? Like, I mean, you've got these countries that are hosting, like you say, for the first time they're opening their doors. They want to put on a good show because everybody's watching, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's watching. So,
yeah.
Go ahead, Donnie. I got a couple, but I can
No,
wait.
I mean, obviously, touching on Beijing was a really good showing for Team Canada. Tell us a little bit about how you guys finished, what your favorite memory was maybe of Beijing. And honestly, for me, how was the food? I really need to know.
Yeah, so I'll go the result first. I'll finish with the food. But so obviously we had our best showing Canada's ever had. We finished fourth. We played in a game with Australia. We kind of snuck we lost to Venezuela in the round robin. but we were able to win enough and play well enough to get into the medal. So it was Canada versus Australia. They call it the bronze medal game. So the loser of the winner of that game is guaranteed a bronze medal. U.S. and Japan were 1-2. They play for that's called the gold medal game. So winner of that goes to the gold medal, and then the winner of the 3-4 game plays. The loser of that game continue on. So we were playing Australia in the bronze medal game. So you win, you're guaranteed a bronze medal. Like super tough game. I think we had Australia 2-1 maybe. I think 2-1. They had runners at second and third. In the fifth inning, Lauren Bay was pitching at the time, and a two-strike girl hit like a little fisted single over a third baseman, scored two runs with two outs. I think we ended up losing the game. They brought in their ace after that, and we lost the game 4-2 or 5-2, something like that. But, I mean, it was a close game. It was a heartbreaking game because you knew you were
right there.
Like, we had the lead, one swing of the bat away. But at the same time, like Australia played the next game, they went and played Japan in a 15 or 16 inning thrill. Like, I don't think with Japan's ace going, like they earned that game and they played really well in the next game. So I think if looking back, they were probably the better team, even though at the time, like you knew we were that close to edging them out for a bronze, but I think they earned that victory and we lost the game when it mattered. And that's kind of what we've had to sit with for the last 12 years. So that was a tough part of the experience. But the food, though.
Yes.
More importantly. The crazy part, so you, like, walk in. Like, the cafeteria is the place in an Olympic Village. Like, it's 8,000-seat cafeteria. And it's just, like, there's a Japanese area where you can get sushi. There's, like, an Italian area. Maybe someone's making pasta the whole time. There's, like, a Chinese fair. They try to make it so every country, there might be a South American station that has, like, rice and beans and American station. There's a McDonald's. At the time, there McDonald's was on. So there's a full-on, like, McDonald's in there. So it's just whatever you want. Like, you can just go up and, like, give me three Big Macs and chicken nuggets, and there it is. Like, that's there.
It sounds like heaven.
So food is, yeah, there's dessert stations. It's like going to a buffet in Vegas. Not that you would know that, but it's like a buffet in Vegas.
Tell me more about this Vegas, this mythical place.
Oh, goodness.
You know what's funny is what he's talking about? Katie's talking about McDonald's and ordering the three Big Macs and the chicken nuggets. How does she know your standard order, Donnie?
I don't know. You see a guy's face and you can assume he's a three Big Macer. I get it. It is what it is.
That's good.
Fantastic.
Yeah. That's good. Wasn't okay, so I might be getting it mixed up, Kaylee, but wasn't the 2008 Olympics the tough loss to the U.S. as well? Didn't you guys have them?
Yeah, so the U.S. game, we had Dion Meyer was throwing. So I don't know if you guys know Dion from
Saskatoon. She's in our,
she's one of our instructors.
That's why I'm bringing it up.
Yeah, so like legit up, legit down. And we had the U.S. We actually had, I think it was a single, a wild pitch, and like two illegal pitches on the pitcher scored us a run. So we had a 1-0 lead into the fifth inning, and rain, skies opened up. They're trying to pull the tarp on, and I don't think that the 50, like, Chinese, Asian people that were supposed to be pulling, I don't think they've ever pulled a tarp before. So they're trying to, like, roll it out and pull it on, and it's folded, and they get the tarp a quarter onto the field, and it just, like, it's got coming down. So they said, they end up saying, okay, we're going to halt this game. We have a makeup day built in, so we're going to start this game from the fifth inning the next day. And you could just tell it was one of those times where, like, the next day, she was still pitching well, but it wasn't, like, the same Dion of, like, the day before. So I think, and they scored, they ended up loading the bases in the fifth. We had a ground ball, J-Cell, like, a chop ground ball from one of the slappers. J-Cell tried to, like, do or die it, end up, like, just kicking off her glove. They scored, tied the game, and then the next batter hit, like, a double, and then it was, like, floodgates kind of opened up, and we're just trying to stop the bleeding. But who knows? I mean, had we, she was giving them fits. Like, had we had that game continued on, it was definitely, like, one of the better games I've ever seen her throw, and in one of the better headspaces. It's just tough. Like, you leave that game and you come back knowing, like, oh, I got a one-run lead against the USA. You have time to think about it, and it's just, it's tough as a young pitcher and even as a young catcher, like, calling the game. But
well, and I think, too, you probably, well, hindsight's 20/20, but I think you win that game, and only because from past experience, when the underdog is winning late, right, you start squeezing your bats. You know, if you're the favorite, you start squeezing your bats a little bit, and it probably would have been really tough to score. But then when you give them that night off to really think about it, and then they kind of gear up
video,
and take a break, for sure. Well, the reality, and again, I don't want to bring up bad memories, but it all worked out for you guys. It's kind of like the Mexico game, right, where you guys were the favorite, and they got a couple of runs, and I mean, you guys. Yeah, their pitcher threw well, but probably one of those games, too, where she's probably having a really good game. And normally in any kind of round-robin game, you probably score 10, right? Yeah. But you start squeezing the bats in front of the big crowd and that sort of thing. And, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
No, ball's a real amazing game.
Dion talked about the story, too. And it was funny because we were at the ISC then in Kimberley that year in 08, and I'm screaming at the TV. Because you guys were winning, and then it all I had a bad experience too, Kaylee. If it helps at all, it was a bad experience for me.
Okay,
too.
I appreciate that.
There you go.
Johnny Dean, I hear no remorse from you, so you guys are on tonight.
They don't like Dion like I do.
That's not true. Dion's my favorite.
Hey,
Dion and I were roommates like all of 08. We like kept the same roommate, so we were pretty much like roommates that whole time. So,
well, now there's part two.
Yeah, for sure.
Have a roommate show.
Have the Olympic battery on. Yeah. That's nothing wrong with that. You can ask Dion. She's in the pitchers union on the twos. So Dino and I, we have a special spot for sure. Tosh really likes the infielders, and Dino and I like the pitchers. So we're okay with Dion for sure. And if you ask her who her favorite is, it's probably me, mostly because of my jokes. I don't think she's been to Vegas either. So we have that going.
Oh, man. No, she's going this year.
Oh, good. Good for Dion. That's fantastic. So I'm going to walk into, obviously, you had a pretty big moment, your last Olympic qualifier moment. You did what everybody does in their backyard when they're playing with their buddies. It's a walk-off situation. If you hit it well, game's over, and you win. And you live that dream. You want to walk us through that against Brazil?
Yeah, so for sure one of the cool, I think, top one or two softball memories ever. But it was kind of interesting because we were talking about it in like the third or fourth inning. I mean, we were up 5-0. So we were kind of at the way Danielle was throwing that game, like there's no way Brazil puts up. Maybe they squeak one across, but we knew at that point that our chances of winning this game were pretty high. Like I would have bet the farm on that one. But we were talking about how it would have been nice, like, it'd be cool if we could like have that moment to celebrate together. Like no one really wants to have, it's kind of cool. Like I guess like others like a strikeout or like the old like ground ball or like the walk off backwards K where everyone's kind of 150 feet apart and you're not really, maybe you can like have that celebration, but we're all kind of saying like, no one really wants to win in like the top of the seventh on like the last out. So we were saying how cool it would be if we actually had that moment. And I was actually thinking about it in the bottom of the fourth, when I was on deck and I was like, man, if she gets out here, I'm going to lead off. Like I'm going to have a chance in the fifth to end the game if I don't get up this inning. And then sure enough, it happened. And I knew like going up to that at bat, I'm like, I'm going to try for one. Like I might as well just try to go yell and end it. And she went down 2-0. And I was like, I had a feel. I was like, she's probably going to throw. She's the only thing she could really get over for a strike at the time was the changeup. So I was looking for the pitch, got it, just trying to hit it as far as I could, and it was fun. It was, I mean, what a better way to run into the dog pile at home plate with your and then with the team, and then obviously the fans there was pretty special. So good to give them a little send off too for all the Canada Cup crowd has been with us for a while.
Did you know when it left your bat? Did you know?
I had a really good idea. I was still, it was kind of one of those like 80% runs down the first baseline. Like that could hit the top of the fence. So I better at least be able to get to second. So the changeup was where I knew I hit one early in the tournament off of a rise ball that I knew, like, it's just, it's not easy to hit the changeup. Like, sometimes you think you get those, and then they end up going off the top of the wall. So I didn't want to pre-celebrate, so I gave it a pretty decent jog run down first base.
No Batista bat flip?
Yeah, I didn't Batista bat flip it, but no. It actually got further over than I thought it was going. I thought it was just going to sneak over, but it was actually a little bit further than I was expecting. So, and after that, game on, party on.
Very nice. Very nice. Very cool moment. Yeah, we watched that game, and it was pretty good. Like from the night before too, it was a little bit, you know, it was disappointing against Mexico, but having that second shot, I knew you guys weren't gonna, you guys had worked too hard. There's no way you're gonna lose that game, and we've talked about it before on the cast. Like, we've had Holly on and we had Jen on, and I just think that, you know, from being around the program and watching you guys train and at different events, I can't see another team in the world working harder than you guys right now. I think that's pretty cool. So.
Okay, so you brought up Daniel Lowry. I've done some research, as you know. A couple big quotes, and one's from her, actually. Pretty big compliment to get from her. She was quoted as saying, "Rafter's the type of player who makes everyone around her look better, including herself." What does that comment mean to you, coming from a player the caliber of Lowry?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Danielle and I go way back. Like, we've been through so much together, and I honestly think one of my biggest jobs on the team, on our team, is to kind of be that. I've been around for so, I can kind of understand where coaches are coming from. I've coached in the past. I know why they're trying to. A lot of times, coaches, like, they push buttons and they like to push buttons, but there's always a reason for it. And I think sometimes when you're in it, when you're younger, you don't really understand why people are pushing you the way you do. And I think being that person that can kind of be the sounding board and be the go-between between the coaches, I think I've really found that, kind of carved out that niche for myself on this team. And I think that, to me, kind of speaks to that, just making people better by helping them understand, like, what's being asked of them and how can they execute at the highest level possible. And I think Danielle and I, obviously, we've built a really good relationship over these years. Like, you just, there's a special pitcher catcher relationship, and when you can kind of be in the grind with someone for 12 years now, there's just another level you get to. Like, I think it's like a husband and a wife, where you kind of know what each other are thinking, and you know when they're mad, what they're mad about, how to make it better. So I think just building those relationships and having the time to build that, but I mean, that's one of the highest compliments I think you could have from a teammate and someone that you're in the grind with. It's humbling, but at the same time, I think it's been a lot of work to get there, but it's been thoroughly enjoyable work to get to where we've got to now.
So just to, and that's awesome. This is no slight to you, Callie, at all, but Donnie makes people look good around him too, especially when he wears his cardigan.
Yes, that's true,
that
Dean. Thank you.
Wearing earlier today.
Yeah. So, two different ways of doing it. I have my way.
Yeah.
Like, I stand around, everyone looks more handsome by comparison. I get it. Everyone looks a little faster as a runner. I do that. That's what I do. I'm the hype
Donnie
guy.
Does that too.
Yeah, you bet.
There's like that emotional part, and then there's just the outward application. Like, you're just throwing it out there for people on day to day.
For sure. Well, yeah. The other thing too with both those guys, Kaylee, you may not know, both of them made hitters look really good too.
Oh.
So yeah. That's a good thing too, right?
I've given up some mythical home runs, yeah. And it helps them and their confidence. And at the end of the day, if you can leave the game thinking, you know what, it didn't end up well for me, but man, that guy's on cloud nine right now. And I'm part
great,
of that
I mean,
journey.
What a great career that guy
What a great
had
feeling.
Now.
That happens every week in practice at throwing BP too. I'm getting lit up all the time. Yeah. It's really good for the ego. Yeah, you bet.
The slump buster.
You betcha, yeah. Throw
exactly
perfect,
right.
Just right down the middle.
Yeah.
I call myself the fisherman because I'm just laying chum right in the middle of the plate, and these guys are absolutely just pulverizing it. It's great.
I got a question for you. It's kind of it's about catching because you know, in Canada, anyways, and coming from the guys' game, great catchers always call.
Oh,
so, and I know you call your own game. And I know you call a game from the bench once in a while. I've seen you do that as well when you're not behind the dish. So did you grow up calling your own games? And when you got to school, did you call your own games?
Yep. Good question. So I'm going to go way back. So I'll say, so when ninth grade, maybe it's in ninth grade, when we were playing with Brampton, we were, we always called. Like, that was the thing. Like, we called. So, one time, we played a senior women's tournament in Quebec one weekend. So, we were playing, we were ninth and tenth graders playing against 25-year-olds. So, for that tournament, we brought up Allie Bradley and wasn't Cindy Eady. There was another catcher in Ontario that was played with Allie. Allie pitched first in some of the games where we pitched against the senior players, but for the most part, like, we went. And I'll never forget, my coach said at the time, he's like, watch how they, like, they are setting up hitters. Like, this is, like, you need to watch this and pay attention to this. This is pretty impressive what they're doing. Like, they want to go to the away, so they're going to go in, away. And it kind of, that was the first time to me, you kind of always knew, like, you learn, you pick things up, like, oh, shoot, they just hit home run. Maybe I shouldn't do that again. But the first time where the strategic part of it, where I started to think, like, this is more of a game than I ever thought possible in terms of setting up hitters and how to go about that. And that was the first moment where it triggered in me, like, this is way more intense than I thought about, and I need to start, like, thinking about this in a different way. So going through, I always called, and going on to the national team, and in college, I always called. When I did get to Florida State, I called. I will say that's probably, I understand in college why people don't call. Like, there's a lot riding on those pitch calls. And when you're talking in college, when you have a head coach, two assistants, usually three families attached to that, and you're talking people's livelihoods, like, that's a little, I get why they want to have control over that. Because at the end of the day, if I'm going to lose my job over something, I'm going to be in control of that if I can, versus someone who I'm trying to learn and teach in that position. So when I took over that responsibility, I did that not very lightly. Like, I would sit down with the coach. We would watch at least probably 3 hours of video and go through spray charts on every team we played, no matter what. So that's a big ask a lot of times for a college kid. At that time, I was pretty invested in that whole process. So having said that, like, I do get why in the college game that doesn't happen, but, like, the reason why it doesn't happen too a lot is because we take that away from kids when they're 9 years old. Like, it took me 9, 10, 11, all the way up till I was 18 to learn the intricacies and to fail a lot at it. Like, why would you call a changeup after a kid just fouled the ball into the first base dugout? Like, that's not smart. Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. Like, they relate. I should stay fast. Like, things like that that we never give kids a chance to fail at now, and we take that whole part of the game away from them. Now there's no chance when they get to college because there's just never. So I mean, I tell coaches all the time, like, unless you're playing for, like, a job, like, if you have your livelihood and your family's livelihood on this game, I understand you calling. Beyond that, to me, there's no reason. Like, there's never a time when it's going to be that important.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, who's to say they're going to do a better job? Like, in all honesty, you're the one that studied. You're the one that you have the angle. A lot of these coaches are sitting in the dugout from us. You know, they don't know if you've missed outside or inside. Or
well, so you know, if it's spinning the right way today.
Yeah.
Right. You see the pitch coming in. Is it moving or not moving? Right. Yeah. No. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I do think it's not like you just throw kids out on the island and be like, oh, it's your job. Like, there is a conversation, the inning happens. All right, like, what were we thinking here? Like, okay, like, I can appreciate that thought process. Have you thought about it maybe this way? Like, maybe we want to try this. Maybe we want, like, there is, it's easy, I think, sometimes, like, oh, fine, you want it, take it. But it's a conversation, and it's a two-way street. Like, that's where you coach them up, and that's where you have those conversations, and you're teaching them how to do it. And in the moment, those are really important to have.
Well, and we're in agreement. Like, the three of us are in agreement because we come from the guy's side and the catcher calls it. There's no coach in the guy's game sitting on a bucket, right?
Yeah.
But in our program, we also do the same thing. Ryan Ray, the catcher whisperer in our program, he does the same thing. Like, I think we've called two games total in 7 years, and they were both, like, final games, and the catcher's exhausted, and they're younger, and so he helped them out, kind of thing. But that was a learning experience, too. But we're firm believers in that, too. But then we're thinking along those lines, well, we're teaching them all this stuff. If it's just going to get taken away from them when they go to school. So that's one of the things that we've kind of gone back and forth with on that one. Kaylee, because we're just not sure where it is. I think we're. I would rather have a catcher have it taken away from her and still understand what's going on than to not and just go through the
for
motions,
sure.
right?
Yes.
Just one last thing, just about the catching side too. Like with the junior team, the four go rounds I was involved in, we called every pitch as well, and it wasn't because we didn't trust the catchers, because they had never done it before, mm-hmm. right? So Coach Rob's on a bucket for two worlds, and Coach Trev's on a bucket for one. But I will give you this, in 19, and I think it worked out to our benefit. In 19, Lauren Benson came, and she had called games in the Renegades, and she had called some games in the States. So we let her kind of run that summer and see how it went. And we had Rivets too. We had Nicole Rive, same sort of thing. We just kind of let him run with it. And I think Trev called five pitches all week at Worlds. Mm-hmm. Like they just did a really good job. And I think sometimes it's just letting them have that opportunity and see how it goes. But yeah,
just on the big stage.
Yeah,
especially on the big stage. Sometimes you don't have the opportunity to let people fail.
Kaylee,
sometimes,
I don't know
right?
if you saw the last sequence on the last hitter. But Benny called three changeups in the last four pitches. That's pretty gutsy for mm-hmm. a kid that age to understand, right? And so, yeah, it was she called the last Widowmaker there, and I wasn't quite sure what she was doing, but it worked out, so it was all good.
Yeah.
I think to your point though, it's important to have that skill set, and if it does get taken away, it's way worse to go in and not know. And to understand the game, you're right there. You got a front row seat to the entire game. You should know what's going on and what you would expect to see there. But you talked about the prep work that goes into, like, you don't just show up and sit behind the plate and put your glove up. There's a lot of prep work, studying hitters and watching patterns. And you touched on that a little bit. You said you're watching 3 hours of game tape and spray charts. And that's a lot of extra hours you're putting in to understand how you can be the most successful and help your pitcher be the most successful back there. So that's incredible. Talk about your 1,000 swings. Talk about your game time. Like you might be on the diamond 3 hours a day, but you're in the game 10 hours a day every day.
Yeah, and I mean even now, like it's on your mind. It's everything you do is still kind of with the softball piece and with that end goal in mind. I mean, we're still going through video and watching video at this point now in the off season, prepping for next summer. I guess the margin for error is so fine. Like if you saw it in that Mexico game, like it's a play in the hole. It's one pitch. It's one strikeout versus a walk in a situation that now you're up 1-0 instead of down one. Like, so we know that margin for error, and especially with our team, like we don't have a pool to choose from like the USA, who can pull 500 players and probably make 7 teams that could go and compete at the Olympics. So we know we have to squeeze out, and that's just been kind of our work ethic and our approach to it for the last seven or so years, maybe probably more, but we know that that's going to have to be who we are, and that's going to have to be, I mean, that's Canada in general. It's our culture. It's our kind of work ethic. It's no different than what 95% of Canada is going to work each day. Like, it's part of who we are.
Well, and you're doing double the work too, right? Because the reality is the pitchers aren't looking at all that film. I mean, you got to do all the work for them, right? The pitchers, I mean, come on. Really? What are they doing? Half the pitchers I know.
It's best to keep it simple.
Well, yeah. And half the pitchers I don't, half the pitchers I know have no idea what an opening ceremonies even is, because they never have to go because it's too hot, right? So we'll just sit in the air conditioning. So anyways, opening ceremonies. Sorry, Dino. Opening ceremonies. That's what happens at the start of the tournament. Usually, big tournaments.
Okay.
They have them. Yeah, yeah. You
gotcha.
Would know. Yeah.
So gotcha. One more. You worked with Boland too on the men's side. As he's the catcher for the men's team. Tell us a little bit about that, because he's got a comment about you as well that he had nothing but praise to say about your work ethic and how he could learn from you. And he's been arguably one of the best catchers on the men's side for 10 years, right?
Yeah.
He's caught some of the best
yeah,
throws in the game.
Yeah, I mean, we worked, we actually had a little, we put together a presentation during COVID. So Softball Canada reached out to us and asked if we'd be willing to do a catcher talk and just kind of talk through the things we've learned. So it was interesting. Just, I've seen him play before, and I saw him play at the Pan Ams in 15. I didn't know who he was at the time. I kind of put it together after. I was like, oh, that was the catcher that I remember. But it's just kind of, I mean, interesting to kind of pick his brain and get feedback from him on how the men's game. And I've been around a little bit of the men's game, probably more than most female softballers, went to watch an ISCs in Midland and kind of been around that side of it, saw some Japan professional games over there. So, but yeah, just I think it's just a different voice, and I think the way I approach it is kind of a little more of a how the body works and what makes sense from a fundamental body positioning way. And then the good thing about what I've done is I've had the opportunity to go out and test all the stuff that I've learned and see if it works. So everything I do has been run through the ringer of practices and games. And if it doesn't work, I'm probably not going to do it. So nothing that we talk about isn't something that I feel pretty confident in, that I've at least product tested it for quite a while. And I feel like I'm at the point now where I'm really comfortable in my skills and what I would teach and how I would go about it. And I'm sure in 10 years it's going to be old stuff and there's going to be a new way to do it. But at least at this point in time, I think it was good just to be able to share some of those insights and then pick his brain as well on the backside of it.
So during your time with Ryan there, then was there a couple of things? Was there one thing? Was there two? Was there a few things that were different from the guy's side that, you know, that we would teach the young, you know, boys in the program or young girls in the program a little differently? I'm curious to see, you know, if you've done that study and you've done some things, because it's a good learning thing for us too, as far as how we need to approach things. So
yeah, I think one of the biggest differences I see just with the men's game in general, and I do think it applies to catching, and just thinking of the catchers I've seen, it's usually a little more of a upright setup. Like, I think guys rely a lot of times on their natural forearm strength. So they're able to kind of sit a little bit taller. You'll see some toe stances where they might be up on their toes in their stance, and they have the ability to actually like catch a pitch and stick movement and kill movement with their forearm, because their forearms and hands are just like, guys' hands are just stronger. It's just the reality of what, and for a lot of females, like, their forearms are usually one of the weaker parts of their body. So a lot of things that I think a lot of the difference or the nuances is, how can we maximize in the female setup? How can we maximize a little more of like getting into our glutes and getting into our quads and some of our bigger muscle groups and making sure those are firing? So we're stopping pitches with our butt, our back, and our shoulder, like the back of our shoulder, as opposed to relying on our natural strength in through our outer extremities, where a lot of, I think, men in the men's game can get away with that. And they can kind of sit there and just catch pitches with their forearms. And it's just a little easier for them to stop the movement, where I think on the female side, we have to be a little bit more strategic. And it goes to short throwing too, right? Like, a lot of guys can sit there and wing it with their arm and throw it 80 miles an hour. And how can we maximize gifted throwers as females? I could do that. Like, I was a pretty gifted thrower in the grand scheme of things. But there's some girls that maybe will top out at 55 miles an hour. So how do we kind of maximize the transition and how they're catching it and how they're receiving it to still give them a competable pop time? Because I do think everyone can get to a spot where they're maximizing that. But sometimes it's just, I think, a little – the setup and the process of it might have to be a little bit more fine-tuned.
There's a joke here, boys and Kaylee.
Go ahead.
There's a joke here. Razor, right? Is our catching instructor, like Tosh said. I like what you originally said, because you said the guys are a little more upright. Well, Razor is low as can be. Mm-hmm. And I mean, almost to the point where you probably haven't heard as many people, you know, kind of, or, you know, coaches talk about their catchers getting in that low stance. That's probably because of his forearm strength, right, Tosh?
He's got no forearm strength.
He's
zero.
Got nada. Yeah.
But no, zero.
I feel bad for him because we just gang up on him, but maybe he's onto something there.
He's not a strong guy at all.
You would say, right? He's maximized his ability is what he's doing.
He's got a good Lord.
He's got to use all the big muscle groups.
He is gummy.
Honestly, too, as a general rule of thumb, I would say a lot more in the men. Like, girls have extremely good hip flexibility. It's part of our genetic makeup. Like, we have – our hips can open, and we have the ability to get a lot lower. Like, a lot of guys, if you tell them to get down in with their armpits in their knees and go heels down and get your butt to the ground, like, they can't do it because it's just a lot – they're just stiffer and they're built more straight line, and that's just anatomically speaking, that's the way it is. So how do we maximize what our gifts are to kind of neutralize maybe what we don't have on another area?
I think if I got into that position, I would never, ever get out. So if you actually said, hey, now do something else, it'd be like, well, no, I can only ever do this. And that's
yeah,
it.
I'm here. You'd be down for a week.
And one time.
Oh, and you get a catch the ball.
You get one. That's it. And that's it for me.
We should get some video. I'll get some video of Razor catching and the stance that he's in. Yeah. And, he is really low. He's really low.
And you can see that in the majors. Like if you, I don't remember, who was it? Ruiz from the Phillies. Yeah. Like, he used to catch literally in a lateral squat. He'd have one leg completely out.
Tony Pena used to do that, too. Tony Pena.
Yeah. Like, just some of the variations you see in Major League. But it's all flexibility and what their gifts are and what kind of you're built with, for sure. But...
Well, now it's one knee down, and they look lazy, but in actuality, they're just trying to get lower, right?
Yeah.
It's one knee down.
Right.
And yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it
that's
played,
right.
Though. Cool.
Yeah. Yep.
So we got a couple other things you've done that are pretty impressive. Japan. Spent a couple seasons in Japan playing, and that's got to be a story that most people haven't heard. So I would love to hear a little bit about your two seasons playing for Honda.
Yeah.
Great car brand, by the way. Very reliable engines.
If there's one, so I'll tell you a story that I heard about Japan. This came up in the factory. So this is pretty applicable to, like, Japan as a culture. So there was people that came over from one of the plants in Ohio. They came over. Sorry, a few Japanese people went to the plant in Ohio. And at the end of the line, there was a person that their sole job was to take the bolt that goes into the door, the car door at the very end, and their job was to take the hammer and, like, hammer the bolt in to, like, make sure the door fit on properly. And the Japanese workers that came over were just completely baffled that they would need someone to do that, because in their if the process was correct the whole time, there was never a need for that person. Like, you are paying someone to fix what should have been fixed in the process the entire time. Like, there should have never, that's the process failing and you guys failing as a company, to have someone that's their only job is to fix what other people's mistakes were, or what the line's mistakes were the entire time. And if I could probably sum up Japan, and like, it is, we will do everything we need at the best of our ability as many times as possible. We don't care how long it takes. We will be out there from 12 o'clock to 8 p.m. every single day, one day off a month. And that's how we approached it. And they literally, like, beat the game into submission, in sense that, like, you are, and there's a very specific type of player that lasted in that league. And if you do, you can really excel. But it's tough. Like, it is a complete grind to excel over there. I'm speaking from the Japanese players that excel. But they do, like, it is completely a mind game, and it is, like, the pressure that is put on them to perform and, like, bring honor to the company and not be that, like, mistake person at the end. And they completely, like, I will go 24 hours a day. Like, we would have practice. We would go out to practice at 12:30. They would get off. They would work from 8 a.m. to 12. We would get that time in the morning. They'd work in the factory. They would have lunch in the factory. We would meet them at the field at 12. We would practice until usually 7:30. We'd get dismissed. They would stay and do extra. We would go back to our dorms and eat. And then they would, like, I would eat, go shower, and I'd look out my door at, like, 10 o'clock at night, and there's, like, 10 people just doing freaking dry swings in the parking lot with their bat. And, like, every day. And it's one day off a month. We got, like, one Monday off in a month. And other than that, like, you're practicing all the time, like, three games a day, just going for it. And that's just what they do.
Back in the 90s, I had an opportunity to go to Japan with Region Communications, a team out of BC. And I'm just throwing it out there. I'm just wondering, so how much of Japan, like, did you kind of tour around and see a lot of different parks? Because there's one diamond that I can remember, and I don't know where we were. I couldn't even give you a name. But when you stood at home plate, Mount Fuji was literally built, like, the diamond was built. So Mount Fuji, the edge of it would go to one foul post right to the other. And it was such a spectacular diamond that I think if you played on it, you'd remember it. And so I just thought I'd throw it out there. Did you ever see anything like that?
We never played at a field. I have not played at that field. I feel like we've been by it quite a bit. We did rotate around, so every weekend in league, you'd play at a different host site. So you might be a flight, you might be a 2-hour drive, you might be a 10-hour drive, like depending on the wherever you traveled around, and you 4 teams would go to that site. You play each team once, and then that would be the end of that. So we got to see a lot. I have not played on that field. Sounds pretty cool.
I'm thinking it was within 2 or 3 hours of Tokyo anyways.
Yeah,
I don't think we were that
pretty close. Yep.
Yeah.
So, you're using white balls then, Dino?
I think so. Or brown.
Yeah, so the ones that get ripped up off of you on the Mount Fuji, you couldn't see them anyways because they were white into the snow.
Just poof, into the lava.
Of course, you had enough pine tar on the ball that it was probably black anyway, so it doesn't really
matter.
It would take
a minute or two before it burned up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Kaylee, I'd be remiss if I asked you about the food in China if I didn't ask you how was it in Japan. Just want to compare.
Japan, I can tell you, it's got to be amazing.
So we talked about that Las Vegas. No, I'm just kidding.
There we go.
It was interesting. We had an interesting setup at the dorms we stayed in. We had a man and a wife who they would make all our food for us. So we had to eat. Probably not a situation if you're a picky eater, because you get, everyone would get the exact same portion and the exact same amount. And you had, it was pretty expected, unless it was, a dire need, that you ate everything. And so there was sometimes you might have, pickled squid, there's some different things. So it was pretty adventurous at some points, but you can definitely, the food in Japan, it's pretty good. Like, ramen is still one of my top food choices. If I'm in a mood, I'm a little spoiled with it now. I can't find good ramen here, but there's definitely some good eating there for sure.
Well, as a Caesar guy, I think you could pickle anything and it would be delicious. I think that's probably fine. Squid might be a tough one in the Caesar, but you never know. It's maybe the Clamato juice. It's a natural segue. Think about
it. Yeah.
Looking at the three guys on this cast, there's no way we're getting away with the portions that everybody gets.
Oh, I'd be taking leftovers. Are you done with that? I'll have that for sure.
Oh, it was
more pickled squid.
The first time I came back, I'm getting chicken wings. Like, we talk, you're over in Japan, you're like, what's my first meal? And I'm like, I'm having chicken wings. I think I got 4, and I'm like, guys, I'm full. Like, my stomach has shrunk being over in Japan. Like, it is, you learn over time to not, like, the portion sizes, it's a thing.
Maybe we need... You and I need to go to Japan, Donnie.
It sounds like it.
Maybe that's what we got to do.
It sounds like torture, if you're asking me, honestly.
Yeah.
Where's my 3 Big Macs? I can't get by on that.
Okay, so let's flash forward now. Kind of a crappy situation that obviously went on, and you guys, like I said, before, I know that there's no other country working harder than you guys. You've got a tight squad, and I know the final selections haven't been made yet, but I think that whole group is tight, that it doesn't matter who gets picked. Everybody is on board with everything that you're doing. So I guess, what was the first reaction you had, obviously, when it gets postponed, and how did that feel? We've had Holly on, but what's kind of been your kind of April till now, and then how do you see it going moving forward?
Yeah, so, for me, it was tough. Being honest, it took a little bit to kind of digest it, but I think the hardest part for me is that I this will be my last run. Like, it was, everything we had done that year was preparing for this to be your last run, and you get under the 100-day mark. The last time I had a fitness test, the last time I had to run the damn beep test, like, all these things that suck about softball when you get to my age, that, like, the stuff that's not fun, like the practice and, like, the run, practice is fun, but, like, all those other things that go along to being able to perform in those moments that aren't softball were kind of, like, slowing down and getting to the end, and we had gone through it, and we were finishing Halifax camp, and then just a fathom, like, changing that little dial on my phone from 99 days to like 100 or 475 days, like, just demoralizing to make that switch, and knowing, like, I got to put myself through this again, because I think I remember Kobe saying this, like, I could play softball for the next 15 years, like, I don't have the will to prepare my body to the level that it needs to be at to play how I want to play. And I can completely appreciate that sentiment at this point in my career. Like, it's not the softball. I think I have probably 15 more years I could manage my way around a softball field. But it's, do I have the desire to put my body through what it takes to perform at the level I want to perform at as consistently as I want to? And I was just mentally so prepared. So it did take me a little bit of time to just get over that fact that I have to, we're doing this again. thankfully, yeah. They gave us July and August. They said just kind of don't worry about softball. Don't worry about anything. Take some time. So I picked up a job, did some landscaping. Bet you didn't find that in your archives, Donnie.
Wikipedia didn't have that that information.
No. So just did some things. I picked up a job landscaping, just was able to kind of get out and do something completely different. And in the Florida heat was fun, but just kind of something that I would have never done before, but thoroughly enjoyed it. And then now we're kind of getting back into it. Now that I'm back into it, it's not as bad. Like you kind of go through, once you're in it, you go through the days, but it's kind of starting it and getting through that first few times. But now we're kind of in it and it's just normal again. But
well, I'm looking at Spear's Instagram and it was nothing but going to the lake and drinking beer and doing all that sort of stuff. And then now she's on keto pizza and stuff now. So now she's paying for it, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Hey, I saw that, her keto. She did well.
What's it look like now moving forward? Let's just assume that the world's going to start spinning on the axis the proper way and 2021 is a go.
Yeah, so we're going, I think for me personally, I'll kind of take from now until January is kind of body prep, I would call it. So trying to get my body in as best shape as I can. Softball will kind of take a few days a week, but I'm not going to go nuts and kind of shoot all my bullets yet in terms of the softball realm. And then once you get into January, February, March, that's probably where it starts to even out about 50-50. So we'll go a little bit more softball and then kind of body prep, try to maintain. And then once you kind of get past April, May, and getting into June, now you're talking like that's the full go, fine-tuning. Softball might go to 80%, and we're just trying to hold on to whatever we got left in the tank. And then kind of rolling into July, I think it'll come pretty hot and heavy once we get through. Once we get into June, it's like downhill home stretch, just trying to hang on and whatever, manage my way through whatever aches and pains are perhaps presented themselves by then. And kind of see how it goes. So
it's exciting.
Yeah, just kind of make it through those first, get to Christmas first, and then kind of roll through. That'll be the first hurdle, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Awesome.
Hey, as we wrap up, it's important to note you're arguably, like we've talked about, world-class catcher, phenomenal work ethic, but you also have a Bachelor of Science in Criminology and Sports Management, so you're a smart cookie, too. You've figured it out. So congratulations on all your success.
Yeah.
You've done well. Excited to watch this next 6 months unfold for you, for sure. We'll be watching, for sure.
Yeah.
So we get to the point now where you've gotten to know us a little bit. We've talked about parting shots. If you'd like to take a shot at one of us or anyone in general, you can. Or if you just want to leave some words of wisdom, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I think I'll just leave some words of wisdom, just throw it all down, go all in on black here quick.
Vegas reference.
I honestly, it's never, I love it and I hate it all at the same time. It's amazing. I leave these podcasts with the self-esteem of a tuna sandwich. It is so tough sometimes.
I think parting, and I think I would tell this just to, I know there's a lot of kids listening, but I think find what makes you different and find what sets you apart. Like we all have something in us that's going to give us a competitive advantage. And I think one of the things I've figured that out younger, and that's been something, but find what sets you apart, what makes you a good ball player. There's so many different things that can make you valuable in this game, and that's what's awesome. There's not one body type. I would never be a world-class sprinter. Never going to happen. Like, if athletics was my jam, I would have been retired a long time ago, but this game gives so many different people an ability to have a successful career. So find what makes you different, find what sets you apart, and go all in. Like double down, triple down, like go absolutely all in on those things that set you apart. And if you can do that, I think you can carve out a place, regardless of the type of player you are, who you are. Like there's a place for you in this game, and that's what makes this game so special. But I think the more you can double down and just go in on what your strengths are, and yes, there's time to practice and work out the things that maybe you're lacking. But I think too many times we spend so much time on the player we're not, and we're not really building and capitalizing on everything that we were given. So that would be my parting advice with a few.
That's deep.
A little Donnie dig there for you.
No, I did appreciate that. And don't think I didn't notice. Thank you for that. Just met you and already you're on the list. So congrats for that. Tosh, what do you got?
Well, first off, thanks to Kaylee for coming on. It was awesome. Kind of a back-to-back catchers. As I mentioned, we had Jaden Guy on last week. One of our catchers has gone through the program, and it's kind of started the journey that you've successfully navigated through and has the dreams like you had and is off to a good start. But no, just thanks for coming on, taking the time. It's always nice to get you guys on that are going to the Olympics or potentially going to the Olympics, I guess, because they're not picked yet, but I'm sure you'll be there. And it's great to hear the stories of getting ready to go, because, and I've said this to a lot of people, and I've said it 3 or 4 times on this cast, I just think that you guys have worked so hard that I think something special is going to happen. And as kind of crappy as it was that the time kind of got taken away from you a little bit this summer, I think it helps you guys. I think it gives you more opportunity to prepare and to even, like you say, fine tune some of those things. And I just think there's big things coming ahead. So with that, all the best of luck with the rest of this winter and getting through COVID. And then obviously, hopefully everything goes off without a hitch and you guys are standing on that podium for the first time. That would be pretty exciting, especially your last go around to be one of the players to bring it home. That'd be fantastic. I would be remiss if I didn't, you know, once your playing career's over and you got a little time, if you'd like to come to Vegas and help coach once in a while, that'd be good. Reunite you with Allie and Odie. It'd be really good.
What do they need
always for? We're always looking.
I'm
not very hard.
Las Vegas coaches cardigan. That's going to be my
own. Do you want to be cardigan buddies? Because we can.
Hey, Donnie.
Any day.
We'll see. If you make it by then, I'll rock the cardigan with you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because the cardigans come up, we need to take a picture and put that on our social media as well, so
sure.
People know what they're talking about here.
Sure enough, it is a sharp cardigan, but she did call me out. It's a gray and black cardigan. I wore a gray shirt underneath, and she said I should have worn maybe some white. So maybe we'll take a poll on that and see what everyone's thoughts are. But you are probably right. I did get dressed in the dark, and I'm sorry about that. But it's a good step in the right direction.
Do you have a white t-shirt?
I do.
Do you have a white t-shirt?
Yes, indeed.
Well, you could do one of each on social media, and then people can vote.
Sure.
Yeah. I was just confused. I think it just distinguishes the cardigan from a tuxedo t-shirt. I didn't know if it was
there it
one
is.
Thing.
Yeah,
if it was,
there you go.
Like, different, so.
Well, the camera on the computer isn't as sharp as the human eye. Obviously, side by side, you would be in awe.
Yeah.
It is I look like a lion in this cardigan. It's fantastic. So before everyone picks on me a little bit more, Dino, do you have anything to rip me about, or am I okay, or what's happening?
No, I think you know what? When the pictures come out, that'll prove it all, and it'll know what we're all talking about there.
Sure enough.
Here right now. But I haven't had an opportunity. I've never met you before, Kaylee, so this was a great time for me to actually kind of put a face to the name a little bit. And, you know, and I know that there's lots of great role models for kids out there as far as, you know, in our sport. We've had some of them on our podcast earlier. But just from listening to you talk and how you prepare, I don't know if I've ever heard of anybody that dedicated to the sport, and whether it's getting your body in shape and ready to go, or taking that, you know, the extra 3 hours a night to study, you know, at the college level, hitters and spray charts, like that kind of stuff, that's not normal. So when kids, you know, can try, you know, if they want to become a Team Canada softball catcher, they've got some pretty good, you know, footsteps to follow in. So we're really fortunate to have you on here. And so thanks for coming.
I appreciate it.
You know what? It just hit me. So you and I and Dino, Kaylee, have something very much in common,
and that is
at the tail end of our careers with the national team, we are all trying to impress the same head coach.
Wow.
Because when we were trying to keep our old butts on the national team, Smitty was our coach, and you're going through, as you say, going through your last final go-around. No, he's your coach. So we know a little bit about coming to the end of your career and trying to impress
him. Tosh sent him a lot of chocolates. I don't know what that was all about.
Jujubes.
I just said I'm going to work hard for
you. Oatmeal raisin. Like, you guys, yeah, oatmeal raisin is the way
gift,
that guy.
Gift cards and all sorts of stuff.
That's right. Just tell him he's a really good golfer.
The other thing the three of us have in common is we didn't wear a cardigan on the show.
That's true. You've all
Sorry.
Been outclassed,
all
for sure. No, I get it. That's
you.
Fair.
Yeah.
Bring
there
it up.
There you go.
We're day class A. You're
yeah.
class A.
Fair enough.
That's right. That's right.
I don't have the resume you guys have, so I've got to dress up. But the only thing I'll add, too, is as this podcast is growing and people are listening and we're getting more and more guests, the quality of guests is just going through the roof. Like, having someone like you on our podcast is just phenomenal. Your story's amazing. And you're basically doing what every athlete who comes through our program wants to do. So to hear it right from you is, we could tell them all day, but now we've got somebody on here who's doing it, not done it. You're doing it right now. So I really appreciate you taking the time from your landscaping career and just coming on and talking, you know. I think that's fantastic. I can fire shots too. So also, I do have some trees that need some pulling in my backyard. If you're available, I would love to have you come in and give me a quote. So keep
for
in
you,
mind.
Good price. Yeah. I got you.
I can't keep buying cardigans. I'm paying thousands of dollars to get my yard done. So anyway, that's it.
And I will
it.
Say, like, I am, I know it seems like, oh, this is, like, on the national team, whatnot. Like, I will always, like, tell your team, like, tweet at me, shoot me an Instagram. I think it's KayleeRaptor5 is my handle. So open book. I have kids. I love it when kids shoot me videos. What do you see? What can I do better? Totally. We'll try to get back. Open book. Just feel free to shoot anything you want at me, even if it's just to say hi. I will try to get back to you, but I try to make this, it's about growing the game, so I try to be as open as I can with all that stuff, so it's not a, I'm here and you guys are there, this is a, we're trying to grow Canada softball, so it's a two-way street for sure.
Amen. Amen. So it's actually you going to be tweeting back, it's not like somebody like Donnie sitting there working for
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I don't, I know you're surprised, I don't have someone that I've hired to just answer my tweets, so I will.
Wow, that's
it
cool.
It will be authentically me.
Okay,
we will be bitterly, and I mean bitterly disappointed, if you don't make a comment on our social media on the cardigan pictures.
Okay.
And they're coming, they'll be up this week sometime. Donnie's got to take a little side-by-side.
You
oh,
bet.
See if
they're
I
going
up. On this.
I just gave you a Twitter follow just now, so you got a new follower right now.
Yeah, that's right.
If you want all your 90-day fiancé updates, I'm your guy. So, fair enough. Thanks again for your jousts. It was great to take a beating from a stranger, and thanks for coming on the cast. It was fantastic.
Say goodnight, Donnie.
Goodnight.
Thanks for listening to Tues Talk. New episodes weekly on Tuesdays. For more info, visit myloydminsternow.com or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.